Good morning. I'd like to welcome the viewers today to this special Heart Month presentation focusing on the prevention and treatment of heart disease. I'm Bill Fraunheim, a cardiologist with the Spectrum Health Medical Group, and I'm joined today by my two newest partners, Dr. Keith Frank over on the right and Dr. Marcel Letourneau on the left. These guys have been with us for about 6 months, but they've hit the ground running and they're doing really an outstanding job. Just to start with a little background, when I joined the practice here 24 years ago, there was no full-time cardiology on the Lakeshore, with really tremendous support from Holland Hospital in combination with Spectrum. We've been able to grow steadily. We now have 7 full-time cardiologists that live and work on the Lakeshore. We have 4 physician's assistants. In addition, we're joined by some of our Grand Rapids-based colleagues that come to the Lakeshore to provide subspecialty services like advanced heart failure, vascular surgery, electrophysiology. So we've really been able to create at Holland Hospital a Lakeshore hub of cardiovascular excellence. We provide a full range of cardiovascular services in state-of-the-art facilities, and it's really been a wonderful, wonderful thing to be a part of. We have some satellites on the Lakeshore that we also staff. We go to Health Point in Grand Haven and Zeeland Hospital, and we're going to be staffing a new clinic in South Haven with one of our advanced heart failure specialists. That said, our program has really been enhanced by the addition of these two guys. I'd like to welcome them both and start, Dr. Letourneau, with you. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your interests?
Sure. So I'm a Michigander from the beginning. I'm from the east side of the state, a little town called Heartland, Michigan. It's not so little anymore, but kind of in the Metro Detroit sort of area. Born and raised there, went to undergrad at Michigan State, go green, and then did my medical school down in Missouri, Kirksville College of Osteopathic Medicine, the founding osteopathic school. Interests, I'm a big hockey guy. I guess who from Michigan isn't? I'm excited to eat on the pond this weekend, probably as it gets colder. Attempt to golf here and there, but mostly just out there having fun. Wife Tiffany is actually a doc here in town as well, and we have one daughter, Tenley, with one more on the way in a few months here. So. Excited to be here and put down some roots on the west side, and we've really enjoyed it so far.
We recruited Dr. Letourneau heavily from the east side. He really brings some of the latest and greatest expertise in interventional cardiology, and he'll be telling us a little bit about that later. Dr. Frank, also heavily recruited from the east side of the state. He has a very broad skill set. He's the kind of guy that every practice needs to really function well. So, Keith, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am from the east side as well. I'm from a small town over there, too, New Baltimore. So my family still lives over there. My wife and 2 kids live, obviously, here now. We moved over in July, and we love it over here. I've got 2 3.5-year-old twins, so my hobbies are playing Play-Doh and doing puzzles and pulling kids in the sled. So, but we really enjoy it over here, and just being outdoors is our favorite thing to do. So
let's switch gears for a minute here and then talk a little bit about the prevention of heart disease. Keith, can you tell us why it's so important that we care about heart disease in the first place?
Sure. Heart disease is very important to all of us, I think. It's the number one cause of death in American citizens, and the reason it's so important is because it's preventable. There's a lot of things that we can't do to prevent heart disease. Some of those things that would be a risk factor would be your age and just family history. But outside of that, there's many things that we can do to prevent heart disease from happening. About 50% of people in the United States have a risk factor. And if we could do things like exercise or eat healthy and prevent it, those things can easily be done.
Yeah, I mean, some people say that as much as 80-85% of heart disease is preventable just through aggressive lifestyle and healthy lifestyle modification. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And it's simple things, too. It's a little bit of exercise every day. It's making healthy choices, choosing low-salt low salt foods or low fat foods, or picking the right things just here and there, and making subtle changes in your lifestyle can really make a big difference.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. Marcel, what about let's say you do all the right things and doesn't work? What are some of the symptoms people should look for heart disease?
Yeah, so in heart disease, there's a lot that encompasses heart disease. There's abnormal heart rhythms, there's blockages in the arteries, there's weakening of the heart muscle itself. So those are kind of the big three things that can drive symptoms. But as far as an interventional standpoint, if you have blockages in the arteries, you look for chest pain, or sometimes it's called angina. It can be pressure on the chest, it can be shortness of breath, and usually that's associated with exertion. So, you start going out for a walk with your dog, or if you're playing with your kids, or for a little jog, and you get increasing chest pain with that, it's because your heart is getting less blood flow through that blockage. And that blockage might be okay at rest, but when the heart has increased demand, then you can start getting these symptoms: chest pain, shortness of breath. Sometimes you can get some early beats, like some flip-flops, we call them palpitations. And then there's other things that if you have a weakened heart, you can have that shortness of breath. You can get chest pain as well, but a lot of times we call that heart failure, and that's where the heart is pumping weaker. Either it's pumping weaker, or it's not relaxing as well as it should. So sometimes you can have a normal pumping function with a abnormal relaxation of the heart, and the fluid backs up into the lungs, and then you get short of breath when you walk around or anything like that. You also can get short of breath when you lay down flat. And you can also kind of wake up in the middle of the night kind of gasping for air. So those are the big symptoms.
So I think you make a really good point, actually. When we're talking about heart disease, it encompasses a lot of different things. For the purposes of the discussion today, we have to narrow this down. So we're really going to be focusing on blockages in the arteries, blockages in the veins. That's called coronary artery disease. Those blockages can cause heart attacks. If they're blocked arteries to the heart, they cause strokes. If they're blocked arteries to the brain, they cause what we call peripheral vascular disease if they're blockages in the legs. So really, that's what we want to talk about. And you mentioned symptoms. Some people say, or a lot of people believe, that symptoms can be harder to diagnose in women. And then that classic feeling of pressure in the chest doesn't always manifest itself in women. Is that true?
Correct. In women and in actually diabetics as well. And we always kind of quote that population didn't read the book as far as it comes to that classical angina. So they can be more atypical symptoms. It does not always have to be chest pain with exertion. It can be chest pain at rest. It can sometimes feel like a reflux or burning type sensation in the chest. Or it can radiate down one arm, down the left arm, up into the neck. Or you can have right-sided chest pain, or you can, have fatigue, a lot of fatigue with any type of exertion that's not new. We're getting through the COVID pandemic, so there's a lot of people that are deconditioned, and, that has to be taken into account. But those are definitely, they can be signs of blockages in the arteries.
Right. I think that's a good point. As cardiologists, we always talk about chest pain. And I ask my patients, I say, do you have chest pain? And they're like, no. I have fullness. I don't have pain. I just have a sense of fullness or pressure. And so that symptom can manifest itself in different ways. But I always tell people, if you have a new sensation between your belt and your ears, anything, particularly if it's with exertion, you have to think heart.
Absolutely.
So, Dr. Frank, can you tell us, so we talked about how preventable heart disease is, this type of heart disease. Can you give us a few more examples, or what are some of the things that people can do to prevent it?
Sure, yeah. Obviously I mentioned it before, the easiest thing, or on paper, the easiest thing is exercise. Typically what we've noticed can improve mortality and morbidity, meaning things that can make you live longer and live a healthier life. Would be 30 minutes of exercise a day. So a total of 150 minutes a week. And it doesn't have to be all at the same time. 30 minutes a day can be split up into 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there. And exercise doesn't always just include only going to the gym or going for very long runs, things like that. Yeah. Exercise can be anything. You know, it can be yard work. It can be, you know, just doing things around the house. Anything where you're moving is considered exercise, and the more you can do, the better. So
I think that's a good point. It is amazing how beneficial exercise can be, not just for the heart, but for the whole rest of the body. Also, now, you know, there are studies coming out talking about the benefits of exercise in the brain. You know, exercise can lower the risk of dementia. Exercise can improve your thinking. It lowers the risk of depression. They're saying now that exercise can actually enlarge parts of the brain. And so they say the brain is a muscle, acts like a muscle, and with exercise, it can actually enlarge just like some of the other muscles in the body. So I think those are great points. There's a couple questions that we always get, you know, and that's things like, well, what about alcohol? Alcohol, does that increase your risk?
So in moderation, it's okay. You know, typically they say for women, one drink a day is okay. For men, one to two a day is okay. And there is some health benefit with that. Anything in excess really isn't good for you. So, you know, any more than that can cause bad effects. But if you've already been diagnosed with a heart condition, typically, you know, excess alcohol can be damaging further. So we usually don't advise that.
It's a two-edged sword. You know, if small amounts of alcohol might be protective, but we would never recommend it because it's just too potentially dangerous once you exceed those amounts. And there's other risks with alcohol too, like increased risk of cancer in some areas. What about caffeine? That's another question we get.
So, again, sort of a double-edged sword, but some things like coffee actually have been proven to be beneficial, but it depends how you take it. You know, if you're drinking your coffee actually black, that can show beneficial effects for the heart. Once you start adding sugar and creamer and getting, you know, the fancier drinks, you lose that beneficial effect because now you're taking in all these simple sugars and things that can worsen other diseases like diabetes. So, you know, simple cups of coffee, caffeine can be okay. They can increase palpitations. They can also increase blood pressure, increase your heart rate. So those are also things to look out for. If you're taking in too much caffeine, you can start to have palpitations or maybe even anxiety. And so we usually tell people to, you know, pay attention. If you're taking in too much caffeine, you know, pay attention to how you feel with that and cut it back.
Yeah, I think it's kind of amazing to me that we've been trying to link caffeine to heart disease and other disease for decades, and we've never been able to do it. I mean, it just doesn't seem to be a link between caffeine and heart disease. But like you said, once you start adding things to coffee, then it's a whole different story. What about supplements? Should people take supplements?
So generally, supplements are okay. You know, there's nothing wrong with them. Obviously, the you know, long and short of it is they're not FDA approved typically, and so you have to be careful. I like to tell people, you know, be careful with anything says it compares itself to a medication. You know, if it has similar effects to certain medications, be really careful not to take that as you can substitute it for a prescribed medication. That's not what they're for. They're supplements. They're used as a supplemental treatment. They shouldn't be used as a standalone therapy. So, but in addition, generally they're safe.
Yeah. And is there any particular supplement that you would recommend for people with heart disease?
A lot of times we'll have people take like fish oils, omega-3, krill oil too. These are things that I think are totally fine and very safe. But those are the most common things that I see and I tell people are okay.
And I think it's important to realize that supplements really haven't been proven in a scientific way to lower the risk. And so I don't think there's a national recommendation from any expert committee to use a supplement. But in individual cases, you know, I think, like you said, probably not associated with any harm and maybe some benefit that's yet to be proven. So my final question for you is regarding diet. So, you know, there's a million different diets. Is there one best cardiac diet?
The one best cardiac diet, you know, it's been proven and proven. Really, there's the DASH diet and Mediterranean diet. So it's taking really lean meats, you know, chicken, turkey, things that aren't heavy in fats, like red meats are very, very fat heavy, and taking in fats that are healthy. That'd be like olive oil. Lots of fruits, lots of grains, really balanced diet. That's been proven time and time again for heart health that it's the best thing. The DASH diet is very similar. It just uses basically less salt. And again, that's been very proven to be the healthiest diet for the heart. Some of the newer diets that are out there, you know, the keto diet and intermittent fasting type diet. There's just not a lot of data for long-term data for these diets. They've shown great success in the short term as far as weight loss, which is extremely important for heart health, cardiovascular health, and preventing other things like hypertension, diabetes. But again, the long-term data just isn't there like we have with the DASH diet or the Mediterranean diet.
I think that's a good point. The best diet is probably a fairly boring diet, a diet mm-hmm. people are fairly familiar with, low-fat diet. In terms of diet, where to go, you know, because there's so much information out there, I usually send people to Harvard's School of Nutrition. There's a website. It's thenutritionsource.org. It's an outstanding source of what to eat, and it's really scientific-based, and the head of the school, Walter Ouellette, is one of the most famous nutritionists in the world, and he happens to be right here from West Michigan. He's from Hart, and he went to Michigan State, and then he went to Michigan. So, yeah, excellent. Well, thanks. Now let's just switch gears again for a minute and say, you know, we do all the right things. We still can't completely prevent heart disease. There's a residual risk. There's genetics. And people are still going to come in with heart attacks. So we talked about the symptoms. People have those symptoms. They come to the hospital. Now we have Dr. Letourneau, our interventional specialist. What can you offer these people?
Sure. So first off, when we talk about interventional cardiology or really interventionalists of the heart, we kind of break it into three main things. You're either an electrician, and those are specialists that take care of abnormal heart rhythms. You're a carpenter, and that's our structural team. They take care of the valves, which are kind of like doors in the heart. They open, you know, let blood through and then close, and they don't let blood through. And then plumbers, like myself, we take care of the actual arteries in the heart, really arteries anywhere in the body. And then we break up, when someone comes into the hospital, we kind of break it up into two different things. There's something called ACS, or acute coronary syndrome, which really is a heart attack for all intents and purposes. And then something called stable coronary artery disease. So stable coronary artery disease would be someone that is kind of as an outpatient. We'd see that patient in the outpatient setting. They'd come in maybe on a good diet or whatever, but still they've got some family history and maybe they're a smoker or have some high blood pressure. And they have that chest pain or chest fullness or chest pressure with exertion that gets better with rest. Now that kind of goes into one category, and we sometimes order stress tests where we put patients on treadmills, or we actually use cameras or medications to see if there's any blockages in the arteries in a non-invasive way, meaning not needing anything invasive, just taking pictures essentially. And then, or going directly to the cardiac catheterization laboratory and doing a heart cath essentially. And then we switch gears with patients that actually come into the hospital, have accelerating symptoms, and are diagnosed with a heart attack, either by a blood test or by a rather classical clinical story. And those patients we take directly to the cardiac catheterization laboratory. So, and the reason we're doing that is to look for blockages that we can basically fix. So if you've had a heart attack, it's been shown that you'll have a decreased risk of repeat heart attack, decreased risk of death, and decreased risk of having another procedure if you go for the initial procedure to get a stent, essentially, or to look for blockages to then possibly put in a stent. So we do a high 90% through the right wrist. We go through a major artery in the right wrist called the radial artery, and go up into back up into the aorta, the main blood pipe. We basically take the road backwards to go back into the heart, and inject IV contrast. We call it dye, D-Y-E, and take pictures. And if there's blockages there, that's where someone like me comes in and basically puts stents in. So stents are, they're basically a metal scaffolding. They almost look like a chicken wire on the outside. They're nitinol stents. We're on our third generation stent, third generation drug-eluting stent. And patients usually do quite well with it. Overall, it's a safe procedure. There are risks to anything you do invasive, but I always tell patients there's risks to not fixing these blockages as well, especially if you have a heart attack. After stents, you have to be on blood thinners, and some people worry a bit about that. We're trying to shorten the amount of time that patients are on blood thinners or antiplatelet agents, but right now we have very solid recommendations. It's 1 year after they get a stent. They have to be on that dual antiplatelet therapy or two medications, usually aspirin and then another medication, to keep that stent open.
So someone comes in with a full-blown heart attack. I always tell them, look, if you feel those symptoms, early recognition can save your life, because you do everything right and it fails, you get symptoms. If you recognize them and you come in, Dr. Letourneau is going to open that blockage within 55 minutes. That's how long it takes from the time you hit the door until the time you open that artery. And it takes a couple hours to have permanent heart damage. So if someone just recognizes they're having a heart attack or they're having symptoms that might be a heart attack and they come in, then you're going to send them home probably with not a heart attack, with literally an aborted heart attack and no worse for wear. So early recognition is the key. Now, when you open that artery, you now have some state-of-the-art new technology available at Holland to help you if you need additional support. Can you tell us about this new Impella or any kind of ultrasound, or what things do you have available now at Holland?
Sure. So great point about the speed as well. Just a quick note on that. It almost makes it confusing down the line. If we get in there so quick and open up that artery, you see a patient, you know, you're seeing them, we usually see patients every year, and they're like, yeah, I had this big heart attack. And you're like, well, your heart function is completely normal. Or, you know, they come from other centers, and I'm sure ours go to other centers, and that is very important because you can basically make it look like it never happened. Now, there's still a lot of medication changes they have to be on almost indefinitely. But, yeah, that's a very good point. So as far as this really state-of-the-art technology in Holland, we have a brand-new ultrasound machine. An ultrasound machine, just like if you have a pregnant woman that gets a little ultrasound on the belly, very similar, but we can take a look at the heart, but we also can take a look at the arteries for access sites. It's been shown in large studies that this is just, it's the way to go. I mean, you can, there's no guessing. You basically see exactly where the artery is. You see exactly where you want to go. It's very important in peripheral disease as well. When we start to talk about finding these 1 millimeter to 2 millimeter vessels down in the foot, appropriately we use something called a hockey stick probe. That is actually the name of it, but it's a probe that helps see those small arteries. So that's just for getting in and for access. One of the fears, I think, that some people might have coming to Holland Hospitals, we don't have cardiothoracic surgery backup. We're not a cardiothoracic surgery center. We do relatively high-risk procedures in the cath lab without cardiothoracic backup. And some people ask, well, is that an issue? I'd like to go downtown to Grand Rapids to go to Meyer Heart. And interestingly, I have all the tools that I need in the cath lab in Holland that I do in Grand Rapids. And comfortable in using them. I do go down, I'm in Grand Rapids 1 day a week and use those tools relatively frequently. The other thing is we actually do mock transfers. So we have a cath lab staff actually get on the table. We actually set up like we're actually going to do a heart cath and we have an issue, which is probably close to 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 10,000, truthfully. And we call the transfer center and get that patient transferred, and they actually time us. And the time it takes to get a patient from our cath lab table into the OR is basically not significantly different from the time it would take me to get a patient in Meyer Heart Center downtown to the OR. And a lot of that is because they have to set up a room, they have to staff, and it's such a close drive over that these patients can be stabilized as they go over. And one of the things that we stabilize these patients with is something called an Impella. The way I explain it to patients when we do high-risk procedures, because sometimes we'll put these in before the procedure, it's basically like a boat propeller and probably just as expensive as the joke I usually make. But it basically spins. You put it into the left ventricle or the main pumping chamber of the heart, and it spins and takes the blood from the left ventricle and pushes it out into the aorta. And it can push out up to 5 liters per minute, which actually is a normal cardiac output of 5 liters of blood per minute. So when you get that, the heart can relax. It can work with much less oxygen because the demand decreases significantly and substantially. And then that allows me to do my work. So if there's someone that's really in trouble, I can put that up quickly. We usually have that up and in within 5 to 10 minutes. Stabilize the patient, and then I can go and open up the artery. Once the artery is open, we can wean down that Impella, turning down the support, turning down the speed of the propeller. And if we need to, we can pull it out right then and there. If not, we do transfer down to Meyer Heart because they have more familiarity with the Impella if it needs to be left in place for longer periods of time.
So those are some great points about fixing blocked arteries coronary arteries, putting in stents, and what we can do in Holland. I wanted to ask you about another new technology that you brought from the East Side. This is really very exciting. This is fixing blockages, not in arteries per se, but blockages in the veins of the legs and blockages in the pulmonary, in the lung, in the arteries of the lung, which we used to be you'd come in with what we call a pulmonary embolus, or that's in the lung, or a DVT, a clot in the leg, and we'd just put you on a blood thinner and you'd sit in the hospital for a few days, and that may or may not work. But now we have some new things to offer. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. So I guess the running joke is that as Dr. Frank and the preventative cardiology gets a little better, us plumbers have less to do, so we have to search for things to do. That's the joke. But truthfully, it's something, venous disease is something that I never really thought I would take a huge intrigue into until I had my training towards Detroit on the east side. And you can really help these patients with, like you said, DVTs and PEs. I'll start with DVT, which is, as Dr. Fraunheim said, clots in the legs, essentially. So you're right. Historically, we have just given patients blood thinners and hoped that the body will kind of reabsorb some of these clots. If you think about your vein, it's a finite pipe. It has so much room. And when you have a layer of clot that kind of grows, your body will dissolve some of that. But then there'll still be a little layer of what we call fibrotic tissue of that vein. And the smaller and smaller it gets, then the more likely you are to get repeat clots, the more likely you are to get swelling in your legs that does not go away with diuretic or anything like that, or water pills, because the blood can't travel back up to the heart. So what we're really trying to do is prevent that. It's something called post-thrombotic syndrome. We're trying to prevent bad complications or further down the line complications of these leg clots. And we do that, there's multiple different catheters we can use, which are basically kind of hollow tubes that we can actually go up, and there's one that we can suck the clot out with almost a high-powered vacuum, and there's another one that we can actually pull it back out with a cage, essentially. And these patients get almost instant relief within an hour or two. Within 24 hours, their swelling is significantly improved, their pain is significantly improved, and I would like to think that over the years, their chance of having a repeat insult is going to go down. Now, the data on that is still being compiled, but in the short term, if you have any pain or swelling, especially in one leg after long travel or even after a COVID-19 infection, because we've been showing that there's increased clots in patients that have had COVID, then that's something that we can take care of. We like to take care of it within 5 days of symptom onset. So again, this can be, you know, something that we can try to get on quickly, whether it be with a primary care doctor ordering just a simple Doppler of the leg, meaning an ultrasound of the leg where they put the probe on, and then we find it, they contact us, we get it, the patients in very quickly. Sometimes we'll just do the consult at the before the procedure if the patient is comfortable with it after discussing it with myself or one of my APPs on the phone, and we can pull that clot out. Also in lung clots, so lung clots is something I'm very passionate about because we really haven't changed the mortality or the death of lung clots over the last 20 years. And that's partly because of the complexity of the disease. When you get a lung clot, it really is, I always say, it's a heart problem. The right chamber of the heart is used to pushing against pressures of 20 to 30 millimeters of mercury. When you have a lung clot, you can get upwards of 50 to 60 millimeters of mercury, and it can cause that heart to fail. So it can cause it to fail so badly that it can be deadly. So we usually put medications again to try to help that clot resolve, but the same thing, we actually can go up with catheters and suck those clots back out essentially with complete resolution of the increased blood pressures instantly. And we have done those already at Holland. Had some really great results, especially through the COVID pandemic. I'm comfortable sending these patients home usually that day. Unless, you know, it kind of depends. I never promise that. It always depends on how the procedure goes, but I am okay. It does happen where patients get out that day. And I think that's something that is great compared to sitting in the hospital for a few days, especially when there's COVID around still.
So it is pretty exciting to think that a couple diseases that we have basically treated the same for 20 years, clots in the legs, clots in the lungs, we now have some new procedures that allow us not just to put a blood thinner in and dissolve it, but to actually go in and take the clot out. And those procedures may then result in improved long-term outcomes like pressures in the lungs and swelling of the leg. I mean, a lot of people after blood clots in the legs are living with a big swollen leg. And that's because that residual narrowing stays there. So I think what you said, I mean, makes a ton of sense. The only thing that I might disagree with is that you've characterized our colleagues as plumbers, carpenters, and electricians. And I don't know if they would like that.
This is true. We joke around about that, and I would say mostly the electricians and the plumbers. I don't know if the structural guys are okay with being carpenters, but it does make it... I think it makes it somewhat easier to understand the differences between us when we start talking about specialists, but yeah.
That's a good point. Well, I would like to thank you guys for your time this morning. I think we've been able to highlight some key points in prevention and talk about some of the newer treatments available and even more so introduce you to some people in the community and, again, just kind of, from my standpoint, highlight what a really great program we have and what a really great addition to the program that you guys have been. So
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.